Welcome back into Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. I'm John Still with Luca Scott and Joey Elias. Not often we come in cold with Michael Farber, but this is my problem, my fault for bringing up famous athletes from NDG, because the text board has exploded with a very angry Notre Dame de Grassians. That can't possibly be right. But we got Doug Harvey. We got Mauro Biello. And the one that's a real oversight by all of us, our former colleague Sergio Mameso. What a disaster by us to not bring up the legendary Sergio Mameso as athletes from NDG. Big
and
mistake.
And not only that, but I played NDG baseball against Sergio, so I should have known.
We blew it, as we often do here on when Mitch is away. Here on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Michael Farber brought to you every Monday at 4:40 by Billy Bob Productions. Michael, how are you, sir?
Good. I think Gord Donnelly was from NDG as well.
Oh, no. That's what we need Michael here to make us look even worse. Thank you, Michael.
No. Actually, tonight is my favorite night of the year, at least it used to be.
Go on.
It's the night before the Hockey Hall of Fame vote. I was on the selection committee for 15 years plus one. And this is what happens the night before. In fact, it's happening right now at 4:30. The members of the committee gather, and they spend about an hour and a half doing procedural stuff. And it's discussion, not about players, but it's procedural stuff. And then at 6:00, we repair to the Great Hall where the Stanley Cup is and all these trophies, and you have dinner. And it's a wonderful dinner, but mostly it's about the stories that some of these incredible hockey players tell. And, you know, to hear Bob Clark hold court, Serge Savard, now Ronnie Francis, Scotty Bowman as a member of the committee, was just fascinating to listen to. So I would sit there and basically shut up and listen for a couple hours during these dinners. And it was so humbling just to be in those rooms listening to some of the all-time greats tell some all-time stories. And it was great fun. Tomorrow's the vote, of course. It gets going around 8, sometimes 8:30. And just a small thing. People say, oh, he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. It really doesn't work that way. Because maybe you are, but that would mean in the first ballot, 14 votes went your way, 14 of the 18. And every member of the 18-person panel can nominate a player, male or female, and a builder. And it would be very unusual for somebody to get 14 the first time, although it happens. So first-year eligibility is the proper term, rather than first ballot, which brings us to Carey Price, who I don't know is on the ballot. I'm not part of it. I don't see it. But certainly I think he's got a shot in his first year of eligibility.
You have Joe Thornton, who's a shoe-in Hall of Famer. Again, we'll see if it's first ballot. Zdeno Chara, Duncan Keith, some of the names who are up for it for the first time, who could all be potentially first ballot Hall of Famers. But, you know, Michael, especially because of the way that, you know, Shea Weber went in last year, I think that most Montreal Canadiens fans feel like Carey Price is kind of a shoe-in first ballot Hall of Famer if Shea Weber is. How do you feel?
Well, it's like the Hunger Games, and I hope I get this right because I've never seen the Hunger Games. Who you're up against, right? And what the rest of the field is, and you've named three very formidable guys, and I suspect there are other players who have been nominated before who might be considered. I'd go back to a year that Brendan Shanahan was nominated and didn't make it. And Shanahan, if you look at his numbers, you say, this is incredible. And you look at his impact on the game during the lockout and everything he had done to that point as a player. But I think Matt Sundin and Adam Oates and whoever else that year, the four slots were taken. It's maybe somebody is going to be looking ahead to 2026. And I think I've got this right, but that's Patrice Bergeron will be eligible. And quickly perusing a list, I didn't see any other name that jumped out at me. So it may take a while, and we'll see how it unfolds tomorrow. But for Carey Price's sake, and I made the argument before, having played for such an offensively challenged team and being the most dominant goalie, really since Hasek, he is more than worthy. And I presume he's been nominated, and I hope that the Hall of Fame selectors see it this way.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Also, the fact that almost every goaltender who came up after Carey Price has always used him as some level of influence. I hope selfishly that Carey Price gets in, first of all, because I think he's deserving, and second of all, it would be nice to have another conversation other than McGillney Mania, which is bound to come up if he does not get in yet again this year. How about this, Michael? Someone who's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame at some point.
This core has been together for a long time, and we've been building to this moment, all along. The work that's gone on behind the scenes, the conversations, the endless, disappointments and some good times along the way, obviously, as well. We're all in this together, trying to get it over that finish line. With that being said, ultimately, still need to do what's best for me and my family, and that's who we have to take care of first. But of course, there's unfinished business here. Yeah.
Our friend Jack Armstrong says, Michael, everything but is just BS. So I guess he didn't say but there, but he said, with that being said, what did you make of everything said before with that being said?
Well, I presume at some point he will resign with the Oilers. He seems to like it there. I think he will have conversations with Stan Bowman and figure out the direction of the team. Draisaitl has already re-upped. Immediately, you have a power base there. He's going to get paid if he thinks they can win. Great. I think he was dragged for his performance in the Stanley Cup final. I think that's a little bit unfair. I thought the Panthers did a great job on him, including Gustav Forsling. Back in the day when I was invited to vote for the Conn Smythe, if it were now, Forsling would have been one of the three I had on my ballot, maybe even as high as two. And he didn't sparkle with even strength, but he's still fabulous. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a scout who works for the Bruins, and we were talking about Bobby Orr, which is natural conversation. And I first saw Bobby Orr when he was 15 last year, the original six. And the greatest thing that can ever happen to you as a sports fan happens when you're near the age of 15. When before other things like cars and hormones and whatever else get in the way, but you're still kind of focused on sports. So, Bobby Orr, right? And he says, who do you think is the second greatest player? And I knew from the tenor of the conversation he wasn't going to go Gretzky. So I said, Mario? He said, no, Connor McDavid. And I said, okay. And I think time will eventually prove that. Or it might prove it. It'll certainly he'll be one that we speak of with great reverence. From the moment he came into the league, he was one of these special players where it wasn't going to be about points, wasn't going to be about awards. It was going to be about Stanley Cup. And I think that's sometimes an unrealistic way to judge someone, even though I've been guilty of it. Because if you look at Gretzky, how quickly he won. Well, he play for some of the greatest teams you ever would see in Edmonton. And, well, Crosby, well, he had Malkin, and they went and got Hossa when he won. Yeah, and Crosby and Malkin in 09 had great years when Malkin won the Conn Smythe. But it's about a team, and it's up to Edmonton, Bowman in particular, to put together a better team.
Well, how about the team that vanquished them? You know, I think Caligula would be jealous of the party that is being put on by the Panthers over the last basically 10 days here. But Florida on the verge of trying to attempt something that has not been accomplished since the New York Islanders in the 1980s, which is win three in a row. Could you see it maybe happening?
Sure, I could see it maybe happening. It's funny because there's been so much, well, this team is the New Islanders. And I want to say, yeah, they're a really good team, can play a bunch of different ways. But no, they're not the Islanders. I don't see a Mike Bossy on this team. I don't see a Denny Potvin, one of the very best to ever play the blue line. I don't, you know, maybe Barkov is Brian Trottier, but he doesn't score like Brian Trottier. Is Paul Maurice Al Arbor? No. He's not. Yeah, it's a really good team. And certainly one of my favorite teams because they were among the smartest teams I've ever dealt with. If you go back, the Baltimore Orioles, Jim Palmer, those years, they were great to be around. The Islanders were a great team to be around. Smart men who could speak about what they did and how they did it. Canadians of the late 80s, I felt the same way about. So I have a special fondness for those Islanders teams, and Bill Torrey, the GM. This was a very classy organization, and I hold them in certain reverence.
And finally, Michael, last night.
Every time I think about that, it's crazy. I mean, looking back to my first year, you know, I went undrafted. 6 years ago now, June 19 was the draft, and then, you know, that week was probably the worst week of my life, and you look now, June 22nd, 2025, you know, I'm a champion now, so, like, I probably need some more time to think about that, it's crazy. I mean, looking back to my first year, you know, I went undrafted.
That is Luguentz Dort. Yes, maybe not the finals MVP like his countryman, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, but he's one of our own. The Larry O'Brien Trophy will be making its way to Montreal North, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Lou Dort become the 11th and 12th Canadians ever to win the NBA championship.
And Lou Dort will win Defensive Player of the Year at some point. He was first-team All-NBA defense this year. I mean, his strips, steals fourth quarter when Indiana looked like it might make a run back into the game after playing such a great first half. The way he plays the game, I love it. And I love what's happened to the NBA. It's no longer, you know, no longer Mean Girls. You know, it used to be you get your three friends and you sit them at the cool girls table. Well, the NBA is now becoming more of a team-oriented game, and you look at the job that Presti has done putting together what Oklahoma City did. And it's been great fun to watch. And impressive, as I mentioned last week, that there were more Montrealers in the NBA final than there were in the Stanley Cup final.
Michael, thank you so much. Have a great week, sir. And I look forward to potentially maybe Montreal's own Ben Mathurin becoming 13th in terms of NBA champions, in the not too distant future. Thank you, Michael. Have a great week.
Okay. Me too.
Award-winning journalist, author, broadcaster, Michael Farmer, here on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you every Monday just after 4:40 by Mitch and the good people at Billy Bob Productions. Coming up next, a lot of moving and shaking, not just with Little Richard here, but moving and shaking when it comes to the National Hockey League as we enter draft week. And Aaron Ward, I don't know if you know, But Aaron talks to a lot of people. I have a nugget or two as to what we're about to experience throughout the entirety of this week. Aaron Ward coming up next here on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.